Hey mama, when I grow up, I want to be an astronaut. That's what many kids have said over the years, and you know what? I never was good in science, so I knew I was never going to be an astronaut. But guess what? Our guest, the one and only Blaine Hammond, is on the show. He is a NASA astronaut, and he is one of these guys that has done it all. I mean, you were you're a retired Air Force colonel, a NASA astronaut. You became an astronaut in 1985.
Yeah, a long time ago.
You know, you must have been right out of kindergarten.
No,
that
I don't know.
You're a veteran of two space flights, and you logged over 462 hours, traveled 310 orbits, and over 8 million miles in space. I mean, I'm tired just talking about it.
I want those travel miles.
That's right. And you flew as pilot of a space shuttle Discovery.
Yeah.
And so welcome to Truth Be Told.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
And first of all, you know, for 6 years, we've been trying to get an astronaut on the show. So thank you for doing this.
Oh, yeah. I was the only one left.
I know. Nobody else is left. So.
Fading fast.
And, you know, 50 years ago, it's not only that MUFON, you know, started.
Yeah, it's amazing. I didn't realize the coincidence until this particular symposium.
Yeah, right? And the Apollo, you know, the mission. So could you talk about how that inspired you to become?
Oh, immensely. Yeah, I grew up in St. Louis, where McDonnell Douglas, of course, their main factory was. They built the Mercury and Gemini capsules, and I grew up in the early 60s. We moved there in 58, so I was there when all the first Mercury guys, Gemini guys, and all that. I used to go watch my dad go on a business trip and stand on the observation deck, watch the old F-4s take off, going off to be delivered someplace, and just lusting to someday fly one of those. Well, who knew that 15 years later I'd be flying one of those myself? So, but I was always intrigued with space. My only connection to UFOs is my uncle, my dad's brother, was a fighter pilot in Korea and was in one of the more famous UFO incidents involving aircraft and also fatalities. The only fatality known interacting with a UFO, it was not due to the UFO, but the guy named Tom Mantell. And my uncle was one of the two wingmen that was in the three ship that were vectored over coming home from a cross-country flight on the weekend. And they were asked to go look into what was being reported as a UFO, and they sure enough got over there, and my uncle used to tell the stories when I was growing up. So I grew up hearing the story about UFOs, and hearing my uncle, fighter pilot, tell me how cool it was to be a fighter pilot. So these are kind of the things that started me off. And I knew very little about being astronauts, but I knew they were military. They had to be a test pilot, then they had to be a military pilot to be test pilots, and then fighter pilots, they were all fighter pilots at the time. So that kind of set the stage of the stepping stones I needed to go through. So the best place for me to start that was at the Air Force Academy. And lo and behold, I'm there on a weekend between our summer training, change over to our summer training programs, my first summer, 1969. I'm in an officer's house getting to eat hamburgers and hot dogs for the first time without someone yelling at me. And lo and behold, there's the landing. I watched on the TV, they had it on. We watched Neil Armstrong step out there, and it was just, and I said, yay, NASA, go. Yeah. Hold on to that, keep that thought. I'll be there in my 15 years. But before I graduated, they quit. And this was summer 69, and by December 72, they quit. I go, hey, are you kidding me? So, but interestingly enough, I was going for an interview, a scholarship interview in December 72, and I was already thinking about the space shuttle. I had to write an essay of what I wanted to do with my life as an engineer or whatever, and pilot. And I have my essay that says I wanted to fly the shuttle, and they were asking me questions about, well, how's it going to be funded and all this. So they were already thinking of the space shuttle. 9 years before it flew the first time. So anyway, that's long road to small house, but that was my inspiration to go to the moon. When I saw him do that, I pursued my goals. I was able to make things happen. You know, you just kind of, one door opens and you go through that, and then the next door is sitting there. What I have to do to open that guy, and just a series of doors. Mm-hmm. And timing has a lot to do with it. I was in the right place at the right time when NASA was taking applications, and they took me. Oddly enough, I still to this day don't know why they took me instead of some of the other guys at Edwards that I thought had more qualifications than I had. But you know, you never know. They never tell you, and you don't look too deep in a horse's mouth for his teeth, so to speak.
Well, you know, we're here at MUFON, mm-hmm. the Mutual UFO Network, the 50th year, mm-hmm. and you know, people like us, we don't get the opportunity to go to space, and God willing that one day we'll get there, but. I know people ask you all the time. I mean, you're up there. Yeah. You get to see things that most people don't get to see. I mean, have you ever seen any type of aircraft or spacecraft or anything?
No, nothing I've seen in the orbit that wasn't supposed to be there. I've flown for 45 years, everything from fighters to space shuttles to the corporate luxury jets, the Gulfstream 550s, 650s, and high altitude, and over every sparsely populated area in the United States, the deserts where these things all seem to show up. I've never seen anything, unfortunately, because I believe they're there. That's why I support JAS. I believe they're there. Obviously, my uncle had a very real experience. He would tell us what it looked like, and then, you know, Jan Harzan, the executive director of MUFON, he had his own personal experience that I'm very well aware of. And if you come in these symposia, you listen to these people talk, there's no way you can walk out of here and say, he's just making this stuff up. There's too much going on. Too much anecdotal evidence of the things that happen in there, just too well defined and too understood. So they're there. It's there. It's just a matter of figuring out how and why and what the next step is with this.
So I mean, many of you that may be up in space or sitting at a barbecue after you come back, I mean, people talk. You know, mm-hmm. you have a beer and people start opening up. Did any other astronauts or any people on your team ever talk about their own experience?
Nope, I've never heard anybody talk about anything. I've seen, since I've been associated with MUFON and watched these shows on TV, you know, Ancient Aliens and some of these other shows that are out there talking about that, you'll see people reference space shuttle videos, low light level TVs. When we had those on my first flight, we had low light level TV looking at during nighttime passes. Mm-hmm. And you know, you see lightning storms and things like that, and particles of ice floating around being limited. Hang on, sorry.
It's great music though.
Oh, sorry about that. I'll have to turn that off, but. Anyway, no one ever said anything to. I never heard anybody talk about it. If these things were seen by the crews, they never mentioned it. And I knew the crews on the flights that are being referenced in some of these talks that people are claiming are evidence of something out there. And, you know, a particle moving to change of direction too quickly, or mm-hmm. or obviously reversing directions or something like that. And you know, I've listened to the explanations of what they might be, and it makes sense. So I don't know. But like I said, I've never heard anybody. NASA never told us, never gave us instructions.
I was going to ask if you ever even said if you did see one.
No, that's what's amazing. As I didn't think about it at the time. I just assumed, well, if I see something, I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
But
they never sat us down and said, you know, they gave us a lot of briefings and a lot of things on how to handle, you know, but they never sat down and said, hey, you know, guys, if you see something, don't photograph it. If you photograph something and you think about it later, don't speak about it until we talk. Nothing. It was. So either they are totally disconnected from it, or they just assume that they'll handle it. We won't say anything or whatever. But it's kind of odd that if I think back on it, that was the case. You'd think somebody would talk about it since we're out there in that element.
Yeah, I want to switch gears just a little bit. You know, after the space shuttle program kind of shut down, mm-hmm. Now we're, you know, SpaceX and other private companies are now going back into space in their own time and dime.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thought about, you know, civilians starting to take the initiative and doing that?
Well, I kind of laugh at it in a way, because it was always civilians in the first place building the space shuttles,
right,
and
true,
building the,
true.
You know, McDonnell Douglas, Boeing, Lockheed, you name them. They're all out there. They're civilian contractors just working for NASA. So, yeah, you know, I mean, NASA was kind of running things, and maybe it's a little different now. These people are using their own money instead of NASA's seed money, but that's good. I like that. I think it creates innovation and spurs people to come up with new ideas and better ways of doing something. But, you know, they make a big deal about landing the rocket ship back on the pad. I think that's cool, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But we've landed things on planets out there without anybody, you know, land on spot directions without any kind of people on board. So it's not like it's never been done before. It's just kind of unique. You do it to the pad. And but I think it's good to have the competition. I'm a little dismayed that they put the shuttle on the shelf early. And now we're going back in history to the capsule design, where the shuttle was a phenomenal beast of an airplane. I mean, it was a rocket ship, it was an airplane, it was a bus, it carried all kinds of stuff. Right. We couldn't have the space station except for the shuttle. Mm-hmm. It took all the pieces up, the elements, the segments, and we put them together as astronauts doing hundreds if not thousands of hours of spacewalk, putting all that together. So the shuttle was a phenomenal vehicle. I still maintain that it could have been modified to go to the moon if we wanted to, because the shuttle can carry extra pallets of fluids that we use to make electricity. We could carry all the extra supplies, get to a space station, have them figure a way to add a strap on a booster to give you enough boost to get out of orbit, and then carry a lander in Pala Bay. I mean, if you think about it, if you just be a little bit imaginative, you could come up with a way to maybe make that happen. But, you know, they didn't come ask me, so.
Right.
But anyway, the long and short of it is the shuttle was a phenomenal vehicle. Unfortunately, we lost two of them.
Yeah.
It wasn't due to the shuttle's faults as much as it was due to management and human just decision-making process that got us in trouble. But the shuttles were, if anybody ever went down there and watched those things built and watched them take care of it, it was, you know, thousands of people working to make everything perfect for it. When we flew, all three engines were brand new. They were all just, you know, when you come back, it was never designed to be just completely disassembled with the engines and reassembled to make sure everything was perfect, but they did that every mission. Mm-hmm. And so I was very saddened when they put it on the shelf. Everybody was all excited about watching it fly over LA. I'm looking at a funeral procession, you know, and I thought, where's that excitement when it's flying? It'd have been nice to
Would have been nice.
Yeah, so anyway, long story, but yeah, it's, I'm excited to see the new stuff. I hope they keep going and pushing to get to the moon, get to Mars. We got to do that. I think that's something the humans are destined to do. But we can't go to Mars without going to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
We did stay on the moon long enough to learn how to live there in a hostile environment.
Well, I was going to ask you that. It's like, I mean, this is not the conspiracy side of it. I'm just saying, why do you think we didn't go back?
It doesn't make sense to me either. It was ridiculous. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, we spent about 2.5 hours
on
the moon. How stupid is that? You go 4 days there,
yeah.
Get out and look around, say, this is really neat. Bring a couple rocks and come home. I would think they want to spend a little more time with a little more forethought of what to do when they got there.
Because, I mean, that's a way for us to build, not necessarily a colony, but like a research lab.
So absolutely.
Something that if we can build, if we're worrying about Mars, why not worry about the moon so we can
test
and it out there?
You know, there have been these Mars One episodes where they try to simulate, you know, the remote conditions of being in a Martian environment where you got to wear a spacesuit when you go outside. But I don't think anything that makes really the impact is if you're on the moon and learning to actually, you know, your life depends on you being able to stay protected. And I make the joke, I said, you know, nothing would be worse than that. You think you got it all figured out and you get to Mars and you go, do you might bring a candle burner? You got all these cans of food you can't eat.
So
those little things, it's those little things that'll bite you if you're not careful, and you need to just experience those. And you're only 4 days away, not, you know, 6 months away or nine months. So.
All right, so if we could take a few years off of you and they came to you.
Would you do that?
Yeah. And they came to you and said, hey, you know, Blaine, we want you to lead the way to the Mars mission. Would you do it?
As long as they provided a round trip, yeah. I'd be happy to go up there. Yeah, I always looked kind of anticipating I wouldn't mind being the first guy on Mars, you know, like Neil Armstrong on the moon. But certainly it's not going to happen in my lifetime. But yeah, I'd love to go. I mean, I would be just stoked to go and do all that. I watch all the space movies, you know, the Martian and, you know, Gravity.
Right.
Well, I don't go there. But I mean, it's excitement notwithstanding the and drama. But yeah, you know, the idea of going to see a future planet, a planet like that, and look around, I mean, it would be just awe-inspiring to do that. And the inspiration to the generations to continue that, hopefully, would create all kinds of new science and stuff for our young people.
Well, the man with the Hollywood name, I mean, Blaine Hammond, you can't really, you can't make that up.
He already sounds like an astronaut.
It does. Yeah, he should be an astronaut.
Yeah, well, you know, half of us have a first initial. I go by L. Blaine Hammond when I sign everything. So, you know, and there's, you know, a lot of the astronauts are somehow end up with our middle names. But yeah, it is unusual. I should have learned to sign it a lot shorter. It's real tiring after you sign about 100 autographs with 14 letter name instead of like a doctor's signature little script.
That's what I do.
Only
just get a few people.
But see, you can write your own scripts if you have to.
Pretty much. Well, so what are you going to be talking here at MUFON?
Well, I'm not actually talking. I just come to.
You wandered in off the street.
Yeah. They just say, hey, you, why don't you come over here and pretend to be an astronaut?
No, pretend to be an astronaut.
No, I'm a real good friend with Jan. He always asked me to come help out a little bit, to be a little bit, you know, bringing people, you know, something to draw in the crowds, you know, because a lot of people don't know. I mean, no one knows me either. I mean, I'm just one of the shuttle astronauts. You know, you walk around and
that's important, though.
Well, I know, but I mean, in reality, no one knows, and not, you know, if you're a you know, Buzz Aldrin or Neil Armstrong, people know who you are, Jim Lovell, you know, those guys. But even then, some of the Apollo astronauts, you know, if you saw them walk down the street, you wouldn't know who they were.
Sure.
So anyway, just an attraction, added attraction to the list of things to get people interested in MUFON, and I'm always happy to help. I feel bad that I can't give them any assistance with a great UFO sighting or, you know, a contact or abduction or something.
Right. That's
maybe
right.
I was abducted, I don't know, and you know, that would explain a lot, my wife would say.
Well, we appreciate everything you've done and service you put in.
Well, thank you. Yes,
it's many of us, like I said, we'll never see that and not have that experience. So we get to live through you and your stories.
Well, I hope they're exciting enough. It's like I said, it's a shame to see it dwindle now. I hate having to be relying on the Russians for our way up to our own space station. I'm anxious to get either, one of these civilian enterprises going, or at least get the NASA Orion constellation set up to go on, to get back up there on our own way to our own space station. So
agreed.
Well, this is Tony Sweet with Captain Ron, and we are here at the 50th anniversary of MUFON. I can't believe it's 50 years, but we're here with Blaine Hammond. We appreciate you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. And until next time, we'll see you then.